It's a great plan if it was 1985. Hello, my name is Will, and this is Exploding Helicopter, the podcast waiting to be made redundant by a newer, younger model. When it comes to bloated sequels, no one has made more of them than Sylvester Stallone. As Rocky, he went from debt collecting on the streets of Philly to single-handedly ending the Cold War. And as Rambo, his war-traumatized veteran, went from a hungry drifter to a Burmese army-slaughtering, drug cartel-destroying killing machine. So, when The Expendables, with its ensemble cast of 80s action heroes, proved an unlikely hit, it was perhaps inevitable that its sequels were always going to get, well, just a little bit bigger. Alongside all the old faces, The Expendables 2 added Scott Atkins, Van Damme and Chuck Norris to its already sprawling cast, but that was nothing compared to the cameo extravaganza of Expendables 3. I mean, just look at the poster, it's got 16 people on it, for goodness sake. So on this show, it's this, the third entry we're reviewing and asking, can you have too much of a good thing? To help me find an answer, I'm joined by a man who lives life to excess. It's the author, filmmaker, and bad film aficionado, Ty Singh. Welcome back to the show, Ty.
Thanks, Will. I'm happy to be here, especially this is the week that Expendables 4 has started filming. So, if anything, it's timely.
It has, yes. Though, you know, fortune has favoured us with the timing around the recording of this particular show. And, you know, regular listeners to this podcast, they will remember your previous appearance when you helped us review another fourth entry in a film franchise, American Ninja 4, The Annihilation.
And, that was good fun.
It was. And at that time, you just published your first book, Born to be Bad, the book of interviews you'd done with action cinema's greatest villains. And in the finest traditions of guest appearances, you're back because you're promoting your new book, Born to be Bad, Part 2. So, what's all that about and what can readers expect to find?
Oh, like all good action sequels, it's more of the same, just even more so. So, Born to be Bad, I tracked down actors that played the classic bad guys of my youth. Actors like Vernon Wells, Steven Berkoff, Al Leon, everyone's favorite Asian henchman, David Warner, Julian Glover. And after the book came out, I basically kept kicking myself because there were so many actors that I hadn't been able to interview. And once you've got one book under your belt, agents and managers are a little bit more forthcoming with letting their clients talk to you. So on the off chance they might say yes, I reached out to a few people that said no last time. And shockingly, they said yes this time, which meant I was then obligated to write a second book. So the imaginatively titled Born to be Bad Part 2 came out a few months ago, and I interviewed the likes of Robert Patrick, Stephen Lang, Scott Adkins is in it now that we're talking about Expendables 2 and its follow-up. Henry Cerny, who's in the new Mission Impossible film and was in the first Mission Impossible film, as well as Clear and Present Danger and all that sort of stuff. The late Tommy Lister, Bei Ling, Tony Todd. I think we've got about 20 interviews in there. And like the first one, it ranges from the entire gamut from like, you know, your classic evil ne'er-do-wells to, you know, bodybuilders and martial artists. So hopefully whatever your action film tastes, there is something in there for you.
I mean, you're a bit disparaging about the imagination behind the title of your book, Born to be Bad 2. But I mean, it does raise a sort of interesting question. Like, you know, when you do a sequel, it's, you know, there are many important questions like, do you go with a Roman numeral for the part two, you know, or do you go the subtitle route? I mean, did you consider Born to be Bad Part 2, Born Badder? I mean, was that on the table as a title?
Absolutely. Born to be Bad was definitely on the table. So was Born to be Bad Part 2 with a number. The subtitle I had toyed around for a while was Born to be Bad 2, Enemy Reinforcements. All of this was really considered, and essentially I just went the most simplest option, part two with a Roman numeral, like so many of our great sequels.
You know, so. it's a classic solution, so, and yeah. You know, you can't fiddle with something that's already perfection. So yeah, I much prefer, you know, Roman numerals. I mean, hopefully you're not going to become, you know, if you do a part three, hopefully you're not going to go down the sort of Death Wish route and sort of just flip between Roman numerals and then numbers, which, you know, is very, very confused titling in that particular franchise.
Yeah, I think I would, to be fair, if I was doing a third book, no offense to anyone I haven't interviewed, but I might be scraping the bottom of the barrel. I might finally be able to get like a couple of names that I wasn't able to get for the second one, but I think everyone else would just be Drek.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
we're suitably warned then of if we see Born to Be Bad Part 3 coming out. So we know that might be the one to
Know that
avoid.
I've completely sold out and it's a terrible idea.
Well, I think it's time that we got stuck into The Expendables 3. So let's cue the trailer.
Can't be. We were close once. We started this whole Expendables thing together, but we had a falling out.
What are you gonna do?
Reload. Welcome to the 21st century.
I could do that.
Wanna slip on a dress and give it a shot?
This is it? This is your team?
Short notice.
Yeah, I'm very short.
Sly and his gang are getting old, so after sacking the original Expendables crew, our aging action star recruits a bunch of young, fresh-faced whippersnappers to take their place. The first mission for the new team is to kidnap a notorious arms dealer who also happens to be Stallone's arch nemesis. Naturally, the assignment goes tits up. The Italian Stallone barely escapes with his life and his eager young pups are captured. With no time to introduce yet more characters, Stallone is forced to reunite with his old buddies, Statham, Lundgren, et al., in order to rescue the newbies who made such a horlicks of their very first mission. Frankly, with a cast this size, it'd be quicker to tell you who isn't in the film, but here goes. First, the usual gang of Expendables are all in attendance, so Stallone, Stath, Lundgren, Cruz, Lee, Schwarzenegger, and Couture. They're joined on this outing by 90s action also-ran and tax dodger Wesley Snipes, and by the wife-beating, anti-Semitic homophobe Mel Gibson. There are also walk-on roles for Harrison Ford, Antonio Banderas, Kelsey Grammer, and Robert Davey. And if you're wondering why I haven't mentioned Ronda Rousey or Kellan Lutz yet, it's because I simply got to move on to the next section. The Expendables 3 has a 6.1 user rate on IMDb. That compares to the 6.6 user rating for Expendables 2 and the 6.5 rating for the first film. So, according to the public, this is the weakest film in the series so far. Box office-wise, it was also the least successful film, although it did still take over $200 million worldwide. The film is directed by Patrick Hughes, who, since making this, has gone on to make the two Hitman's Bodyguard films. So with all of that out of the way, Ty, what did you make of The Expendables 3?
So I'm going to offer a very controversial opinion. And the entire premise of The Expendables is, of course, when it was announced, it was something that I was really looking forward to. And I saw all of them in the cinema when they opened, and I didn't watch any of them again until this week. And up until this point this week, I was of the opinion that Expendables 2 is the weakest, despite, you know, the IMDb rating showing that the public is against, you know, has the contrary opinion, and that Expendables 3, in my opinion, is the best. And I've rewatched them all this week, and I still feel that is the correct opinion. There's so much to get into with these films, just from its very premise, the cast change around, but more importantly, it's kind of what do you want from a film series like this, and what should the tone be? And watching them all back to back, it varies wildly. And I feel that Expendables 3, for all its issues, and it does have issues, that I think it's the one that nails the tone of what these films should be, and basically has the most impressive action scenes and just all-round dynamism in the cast. But this is something we can obviously get into, but Will, where do you stand? What's your kind of Expendables ranking?
Yeah, well, I have to say I've been on a bit of a journey with these films, because I think I felt that this Expendables 3 was clearly the worst. I felt that was clearly the worst in the series. But having sort of I've now watched this film sort of four times, and it's kind of slowly gone up in my estimation each time. And I would say, I mean, after this latest viewing, I would say it's possibly my favorite of the series. I feel like I need to go back and watch Expendables 2 to be completely definitive. But I certainly think it's better than the first film. So, I mean, At the moment, I would say maybe have it level pegging, pending a final decision with Expendables 2. But I would certainly, for my money, I would say the first film is for me the least successful. And as you were saying, talking about the tone of these films, I do feel that one is a complete outlier in terms of the tone of that film compared to the others. So I mean, yeah, do you want to sort of walk us through, because you're saying the tone of these films all varies wildly. So yeah, do you want to sort of put some meat on the bones of that comment?
Yeah, sure. So I mean, the first one, when it was announced, it's like, oh, all your greatest action heroes of your youth are all coming together for one action film. And of course, everyone's excited, especially, you know, when they say, oh, we're going to get Schwarzenegger and Willis in. You're like, okay, this is going to be great. And straight off the bat, the most disappointing thing about the first one is there is one scene with them all together, and the dialogue is so stilted and so forced. You can only imagine what a Planet Hollywood board meeting must have been like back in the day. Everyone's trying to one-up each other. Nothing they say is funny. It's horrible. And Stallone, who directed the first one, I think I know what he was going for, kind of like these kind of gritty, grizzled mercenaries who have all wasted their lives. Hmm. And you kind of get a monologue from Mickey Rourke, who witnessed a civilian kind of kill herself. Dolph Lundgren's character, who is, you know, strung out on drugs and kind of hates everyone. And at the same time, the plot line is very 80s movie central. There is a Latin American island ruled by a dictator. So far, so 80s. And the Expendables go there and are raided by the dictator's daughter. And it ends with what is arguably a massive, you know, all out, you know, carnage, explosions, gunfights and everything. And that's great. But the thing is, you know, when you've got characters called Hail Caesar and Toll Road, these things do not combine with a kind of grizzled overthrow where, you know, the father's got to decide whether or not he's going to execute his rebel daughter. And, you know, Lee Christmas is deciding, you know, whether or not he wants to be with his girlfriend who's cheating on him. And you're like, guys, this is not what we came for. Mm. You know, we want a bit of fun. We want a bit of dynamism. Some to and fro that you sometimes get in scenes between Statham and Stallone, but it's not very well written and it's very forced. And the thing about Expendables 3 that struck me is that I would argue Schwarzenegger, Dolph Lundgren and Stallone are all of a type. They are these big guys that look good with a gun, and they are one-man armies, and they don't necessarily play well with others. And that's why it's always great when they're up against someone like Wesley Snipes. And when you've got Wesley Snipes and Antonio Banderas in these scenes with arguably very one-note characters, there's so much more dynamism. It's so much more exciting to watch. There should be more counterbalance in the team. And I think that is kind of where the Expendables franchise has gone wrong. We should be losing these characters. People should be dying. You should have, you know, with all respect to Terry Crews, who I love, and Randy Couture, who's a very competent fighter, they could have died in the first one and no one would have cared. And then each film should be Stallone needs to assemble a team for the mission. If you're going up against Jean-Claude Van Damme and Scott Adkins, don't bring Dolph Lundgren. Assemble a team that's made up maybe of Donnie Yen and Joe Taslim and some martial artists. You know, if Jet Li can only be in your film for 10 minutes, maybe kill him off in that 10 minutes and make it more a revenge mission. But, you know, they're shoehorning in everyone for their cameos. And for a series called The Expendables, there's very little death. And like you said, by Expendables 3, everyone's still alive. Hail Caesar, who is the reason he's forming a new team, is still there at the bar at the end. It's a very confusing franchise, and let me know if you agree with kind of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's several points to really sort of get into there. I mean, I definitely agree. I think the first film, for me, it's not really, I think, what you want from a film with these types of actors in. I mean, they go for this very, there's a very dark tone in it. There's quite a lot of bitterness amongst the characters, and it just, you know, they're reckoning with their lives, and it's just, look, I'm here for Stallone, Lundgren, and, you know, I want a bit of male badinage and lots of gunplay. I don't want these people having long, dark, miserable nights of the soul. That's I'll go and get that from another film, and probably from a film not directed by Sylvester Stallone, who I'm not sure is really the best person to be handling that type of material. And I felt like Expendables 2, I felt like that was the film that sort of where they realised what it was they should be making with these types of actors, and that one I feel really starts getting the kind of the tone right and the interplay between the actors much more sort of in line with what I think audience expectations were. And you know, in terms of the third entry, it's way, way overstuffed. I mean, I do think the film actually does do a good job of giving this massive sprawling cast, like giving everyone some sort of moment. And that actually does largely make sense. I do think the finale of this film is very well handled in terms of you've got all of these characters, they're all in this big building. It's a fantastic location. And I think the one guy who does very badly in the finale is the poor sod, I forget his name, who's climbing up the lift shaft. I mean, that's just the weakest.
Glenn Powell, who is in the new Top Gun film, and I really like him. But I think I agree. The thing about Expendables 2 for me is it's a film of two halves, and I think it starts very well. It's directed by Simon West, who, of course, did Con Air and the first Tomb Raider film. It starts off with this big action scene. They go in there, trucks smashing through bad guys. They rescue Arnie and a Chinese billionaire. And then they take off in their plane, they're blowing up bridge, and you're like, this is great. And they've got a new young member of the team, played by a Hemsworth. And you're like, okay, this is fun. I mean, I think at that point, no one really knew who Liam Hemsworth is. I think he'd been in The Hunger Games. So you're like, I don't know why Liam Hemsworth is here. But, you know, he's killed by the bad guy. And it's Jean-Claude Van Damme who, you know, roundhouse kicks a knife into his chest. And you're like, yeah, this is good. And now they're angry and they'll go on a revenge mission. Like, this is kind of what you want. It's a bit more fun. And then it becomes a living parody of itself, where Chuck Norris shows up quoting Chuck Norris facts as dialogue. And I still don't understand why they play the good, the bad, and the ugly theme every time he walks on screen. And yeah, he's a lone wolf, we know, because he's called Lone Wolf McQuade. And then Arnie's saying Bruce Willis's dialogue from the Die Hard films. And Bruce Willis is saying Arnie's lines from the Terminator films. And you're like, this is all gone wrong. And it's also because these guys are all, again, action heroes where they just stand there firing guns. So you have that great scene where there's the three of them in a line firing guns in a crowded airport, apparently. And then you have the two competent martial artists, Jason Statham and Scott Adkins, having a fight in a helicopter hangar, which is, you know, far too short for its own good. And I've spoken to Scott Adkins about this. So the reason their fight was so short is because the same day the director was shooting a deleted scene, which you can watch on YouTube, where Wimbledon star Djokovic is hitting tennis balls at bad guys in the airport. So he's like, yeah, they were so concentrated on having, you know, Djokovic in this film that, you know, our fight we had to do in an afternoon. And I think that, yeah, it becomes so much of a parody of itself. And again, you know, the young Chinese secret agent they're teamed up with really has a thing for Stallone. You're like, come on, guys, look. And that's another thing. You could have had people like Cynthia Rothrock in the series. And it's kind of a bit of a sausage fest. And there's no need for it to be. It's not like the 80s and 90s were devoid of female action stars. We could have had a Grace Jones in there. We could have had a Michelle Yeoh. We could have had a Cynthia Rothrock. We would not have had a Bridget Nielsen, probably due to her divorce from Stallone and her affair with Arnie. But still, there are options. And I just feel it's incredibly one note. And the most important thing is they waste Jean-Claude Van Damme. He has very few lines to have, very few scenes. He has a few scenes with Scott Adkins, and the end fight with him and Stallone is fine, but they are two action heroes that aren't properly matched. One is very athletic and do roundhouse kicks, and at the end of the day, Stallone beats him by smacking him with a chain. This is why I think Expendables 3 is the best one, because I feel an action film is, as I've written in two books, only as good as its villain, and Mel Gibson is the best villain that the franchise has. He knows what kind of series he's in. He's chewing the scenery. He's shooting acolytes. It's great. But, you know, in the other films, you could not care less about what the bad guys are doing. At least they had Jean-Claude Van Damme. He could have played twins. Evil twins of himself. And they missed that prick.
He was wasted because, you know, we've seen enough, especially in latter era Jean-Claude Van Damme, that he, if you give him a bit of material, he can really get his teeth stuck into it. I mean, there's Enemies Closer is a kind of DTV actioner where he plays I'm not going to start talking about that film in depth, but he plays a very interesting villain in that, and it's a fantastic performance, which is far better than that film, which is probably, you know, above average at best. But, you know, Van Damme is excellent in that. And it's a shame that he didn't get a bit more material. But it's interesting what you say about Mel Gibson, because I very vividly remember watching this in the cinema. And when we get that scene with Mel Gibson in the back of the truck after he's been captured, it's suddenly like, there's an actor on the set here, because, you know, even though the dialogue, I would say, is pretty poor in that scene and desperately needs to be cut in half, like, Mel Gibson is actually delivering a performance in a way which is light years above sort of what else we've seen so far. And he's like, you know, this is now kind of, he's a very compelling kind of presence in this movie. I mean, he's what somebody I wanted to sort of, talk about, in regards to this film, because he's the villain here. And, you know, you've written kind of two books all about movie baddies. And as you say, no films is, you know, a film's only as good as the villain. Now, obviously, in years gone by, you know, kind of Gibson's played like the hero in many, many films. But obviously, whereas now, in the films that he's made recently, he's kind of very often sort of turning up as the villain. And so what I wanted to sort of pick your brains about, you know, is this just the fate of an older actor? You know, that's kind of what they have to do. They're going to get a supporting role and it's going to be as the villain. Or is it just really there's too much baggage now with Gibson? As I sort of mentioned earlier in my introduction, he's got a checkered is a euphemism that does him a lot of favors. Checkered history. Has he got too much baggage now for us to really accept him as a hero?
It's probably that. It's probably a lot of that. And Gibson has built a reputation of himself over the last few years that he's brought on himself. But he's not cancelled as an actor. I mean, people are hiring him. He was in that professor in the Madman film. He was just in Boss Level. It's totally up to filmmakers and companies if they want to hire him. Millennium Films clearly do. And there is a reason, like you said, he's very good. He's very good in Expendables 3. He raises the, quite frankly, ludicrous dialogue to a great level. And when he's on screen, you realize why this man was a superstar for so long. He is magnetic. And, you know, there's a backstory there that's compelling. He was once an Expendable and friends with Stallone, and Stallone and the then Expendables, you know, try to have him taken out because he was wetting his beak on the side. And you're like, this is great. And you kind of get everything that Mel Gibson's doing, whereas like Van Damme, he had a great opening monologue. And then the rest of his scenes, just him kind of going, kill the miners. We need more manpower. Go raid the village. You're like, this isn't interesting. But Mel Gibson really does elevate it. And yeah, he's clearly been a dick over the years. But he has friends and supporters. If they want to work with him, that is fine. The great thing is we can pick and choose what we want to watch and what we don't. If you've got a problem with Mel Gibson, and lots of people do, and I completely understand why, you don't have to watch his films. But, you know, I'll still watch a Mel Gibson film. And when he was cast as a bad guy in The Expendables, I was like, that makes sense. You can't cast him as a good guy, really, these days. And he's kind of perfect for it.
Well, we mentioned that we're recording this as the fourth Expendables film is going into production. And I guess you could, you know, sort of looking back at the action sort of landscape over the last sort of 10, 15 years, there has been this sort of boom, I guess, in what they dubbed the geriaction genre, where you get aging stars going out there and kicking butt. And I think there's probably a good argument for saying Sylvester Stallone was kind of at the forefront of that with, you know, if you look at sort of timings, he was the kind of did the Rambo and Rocky reboots back in the mid-noughties. You know, what is it you think that people like so much about these, pension age stars kicking butt?
It's pure nostalgia. That's all it is. It's pure nostalgia. We want to see the action stars that we grew up kick ass so we can say, they don't make them like they used to in my day. That is purely what it is. Come on. I mean, It's nonsense to a degree, but I get it. You can't watch a film like Bloodsport and kind of go, the fights in Bloodsport are better than the ones in John Wick or The Raid. They're not. The action scenes today are so much more impressive. But because we grew up with Bloodsport, it has a very special place in our heart. However, Liam Neeson should not be making more Taken films. It's like, I love Liam. He's a great actor, but you know, you don't need to do this. Although I did like Cold Pursuit, the one where he was a truck driver. But mentioning Expendables 4, it's interesting who they've got in there, because for some reason Randy Couture's back. They should have killed him off. Mm. Apparently Pierce Brosnan's going to be in it, which is interesting. I mean, sure, he was Bond, but he's not really... Is he? I mean, he was in Death Train and all those things.
Sure. I mean, fine. He's done things like The November Man and Survivor. So, I mean, yeah. But they're sort of, you feel like they're mortgage movies more than...
He was in The Foreigner with Jackie Chan. Okay, we'll let it go. We love Pierce. We'll let Pierce go. Tony Yar, here's what I'm talking about. We've got, he might not be in his prime like he was 10 years ago, but seeing someone like Tony Yar in there, clearly to replace Jet Li, excited. Andy Garcia's in there. That's cool. 50 Cent Jackson. Why? Is he funding the film?
Yeah.
I can think of a dozen better black action stars that we can get in there. Get in Michael Jai White.
Yeah.
Boom. Who needs 50 Cent? Megan Fox. This is an interesting choice. Because did you see Rogue?
I did indeed, yes. Features an exploding helicopter.
So. It did. I, controversially, thought she handled herself very well in that film. I'm a big fan of MJ Bassett, who did a lot of the Strike Back films series, and Solomon Kane. And I thought Rogue, for all its budget limitations, and it had plenty when it came to CGI lions, I thought Megan Fox did all right in that. It'll be interesting to see how she does up, you know, alongside Jason Statham. But
I have to say, I didn't quite buy Megan Fox as the leader of a team of mercenaries, I'm afraid.
With Philip Winchester next to her. It's like, hey, he's in Strike Back. You should... He knows what he's doing.
Yeah, why isn't he giving the orders? But you know, talking of Expendables 4, you know, the filming's just kicked off. You know, Stallone's now 75. What do you think the upper age limit is on these type of actors? I mean, can you ever be too old? I mean, we've got Cry Macho that's out there in the cinemas at the moment. Yeah. And that's got a 91-year-old Clint Eastwood punching people in the face. So, I mean, is there an upper limit on the kind of the age that we can expect these actors to keep going on to?
I think it's just got to be, how long can Harrison Ford do it for? Because I think he's the gold standard. The man looks great. He looks great for his age. I'm sure he's not going to be running around much. And even his stuntman from back in the day, Vic Armstrong, is completely retired. So whoever they've got replacing him, it'll be interesting. But I mean, if Harrison Ford can throw a few punches, and he's just like a, you know, a good action star. He's not someone who's constantly ripped like Stallone or Arnie. So I guess if there's an audience there for it, I mean, I watched Jackie Chan's last film, Vanguard, and I was like, he's clearly slowing down and he wants to do stuff more where he's driving a car and he's passing the baton on to younger action stars. And I kind of get it, but it's kind of disappointing. So as long as they can craft a good action scene around your aging action star, I'll watch it. But I think what the Creed films got really right is like, know what to do with these action stars. And Stallone got an Oscar nomination for how he played Rocky in the first Creed. And I was like, this is wonderful. We don't need to see him box.
Okay, I think we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be looking at the exploding helicopter action.
Across the globe, our embassies are protected by the Marines. Men like Marine Gunnery Sergeant Jack Burns.
A man develops instincts in combat.
He'll just have to curb those instincts.
Sent to a land of political chaos.
Tell your terrorist friends this. Don't get us mad.
They attacked his embassy. Kidnapped his commanding officer. Assassinated his men.
This isn't your war.
It is now.
They thought the Americans were finished. We hadn't even started. Fred Dreyer. Death before dishonor.
We're back, and now we're looking at the exploding helicopter action. Given the film's wholehearted commitment to excess, you won't be surprised to learn that there are no fewer than three exploding helicopters report. One chopper bites the dust early in the film. Having completed the daring Snipes rescue raid and with no further use for the whirlybird, Stallone gives the viewer a cheap thrill by triggering an explosive charge and blowing it up. The next chopper fireball scene, which takes place during the climactic action sequence, admittedly comes as a bit of a surprise. So we get two enemy choppers closing in to take out our heroes. But who should suddenly appear expertly piloting a helicopter but Harrison Ford? Unlike in real life, where Ford, amateur aviationist, has crashed several planes, Han Solo is a dab hand behind the controls and effortlessly shoots down one of the whirlybirds, then pursued by the second baddie, Indy deftly weaves in and out between the giant chimney stacks of an old industrial factory until his opponent loses control, crashes explosively into one of the chimneys. So Ty, what did you make of the exploding helicopter action?
You've missed one. I think there was another exploding helicopter after the one that crashed into the chimney. I think they shot another one down, but you don't see it explode.
Well, that is why I don't feel I can include it, because it probably crashed. Did it explode? We don't know. So I think in all likelihood it did, but we can only confirm, for my money, three here. So yeah, that's In my official role as the chronicler of this genre, the three is the total we're going with on this film.
Who am I to argue with the high priest of helicopter explosions? I've already stated how The Expendables 3, for my mind, is the best of the franchise so far. PG-13 rating, whatever. I feel it's the most fun. But where the film did kind of fall down is the shocking CGI helicopters finale, which is surprising considering the film cost 100 million. It's like they had four tanks to play with. Couldn't you get in a few helicopters for the day to do a few in camera shots? So the helicopters through the chimneys, I think, was great, because I bet Harrison Ford was like, let me do this for real, I'm a helicopter pilot, I can do it. And you're like, no Harrison, sit down, we know how many times you've crashed recently. But I think that one's the most imaginative. The other one kind of comes as a surprise, and he shoots it down, and he's like, woo, Harrison Ford's here to save the day. And then the shocking CGI exploding helicopter Stallone blows up. You're just kind of like, come on, guys, we come for the explosions. At least make them look a little bit more realistic than this.
Yeah, I mean, that explosion in particular is painful viewing. I mean, we know they can do a better job even with a CGI explosion than that. I mean, it's kind of but the way in which it's also staged, beyond the kind of technical aspects of the explosion, it's kind of like just punctuation for that particular scene. It doesn't really, there's no real need to blow up that helicopter. It's just gets those actors out of that scene. And
this wasn't a cheap film either. It cost 100 million. And Millennium Films, who did The Olympus Has Fallen and The Hitman Bodyguards, they have budget for explosions. So it's like, why skimp on an Expendables film?
I don't. Yeah, it's a bit of a puzzle. Although, as to the Harrison Ford related exploding helicopters, I did enjoy them. Although I think if I'm going to be, you know, very nitpicky and, you know, about the exploding helicopters, which, you know, if anybody can be nitpicky about them, it's probably me. They're just part of this massive action set piece. And I think, you know, in my ideal world, I like the exploding helicopter to be the focus of the sequence. And here they're just part of this, what is an excellent action set piece. But, you know, I would be disappointed if a climactic battle of this size didn't include any exploding helicopters. But yeah, they do. It's just yet another thing that is exploding here. And I do probably knock a few marks off for just sort of, yeah, bundling them in with everything else.
I understand completely where you're coming from, but I think after the finale of The Expendables 1, which was lots of men shooting stuff and blowing stuff up, and the finale of Expendables 2, which is lots of men shooting at stuff and blowing stuff up, I like the finale of Expendables 3, that you have lots of men shooting stuff and blowing stuff up, and then you have some martial arts going on. and you have some helicopter action, and then you have Charisma Void Kellan Luz on a motorbike putting hand grenades down tank things. It's like, oh, at least we're shaking up and it's a little bit varied. And I think that was one of the benefits of kind of having younger cast members in there to do more interesting things instead of having your 70-year-old action stars just stand there with guns blowing stuff up. But that's just me.
Okay, I think that just about wraps things up for this show. So, Ty, thanks for joining me once again. Do you want to take a moment to tell people where they can buy your book and, yeah, where they can find you online?
Sure. So you can order my book in through all good local bookstores. Do that instead of getting it off Amazon. You know, support your local bookshop. I also co-wrote and produced the action documentary In Search of the Last Action Heroes, which is on Amazon Prime, which, if you're listening to this podcast, might be up your alley. And you can just find me on Twitter at Tymon Singh, and you can find the book on Facebook, facebook.com/borntobebadbook.
As always, don't forget to check out the Exploding Helicopter website for reviews and information on films where helicopters explode. If you can rate, review or retweet us, we'd be very grateful. We'll be back soon, but until then, keep watching the skies for those exploding helicopters.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.